This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. America's national parks are an unrivaled gem, but the already fragile ecosystems were made even more vulnerable during the historic government shutdown. You might have already heard about the trash and the overflowing toilets, but the parks also lost critical income as well, and some observers are saying that the damage could be even worse than that. For example, at California's Joshua Tree National Park, damaged trees may take more than 300 years to recover. So let's talk about what happened to the national parks during the shutdown. And joining us first from Joshua Tree, California, is David Smith, the superintendent for Joshua Tree National Park. David Smith, thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Meghna. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, also with us from Washington is John Garter, the Senior Director of Budget and Appropriations at the National Parks Conservation Association. John Garter, welcome to you.
Hello, Meghna. Thank you.
And folks, we want to hear from you. Did you visit a national park during the government shutdown? What did you see? And what's your reaction to this idea that it could take some of the parks centuries to recover? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. David Smith, let me start with you for a couple of minutes here, because you're the superintendent at Joshua Tree National Park. Tell us, I mean, there's been a lot of coverage over the past day about the damage done there, but specifically, what have you seen in terms of the condition of the park?
Well, Meghna, it could have been a lot worse. We had, I would say, hundreds of people from the local community, from Los Angeles, from San Diego, that were coming up to just volunteer to take care of the park. So they were the stewards that, you know, cleaned out the toilets and put in toilet paper, and they advised people when they saw them doing things that typically aren't allowed, like having dogs off leash and driving off road, just to not do things like that. So if not for the volunteers that we had in the local community, I think it would be much worse. We began seeing damage inside the park probably, you know, a few days into the shutdown, and we were able to bring back a number of our park scientists and rangers to help document it and start mitigating some of the damage even during the shutdown. But I just got the final totals in yesterday from some of our scientists. We had about 24 miles of OHV use, so off-road vehicle use, inside the park, and a lot of it in wilderness areas as well. So that, you know, for me is one of the biggest long-term damages to the park, was the creation of new roads and the folks driving across the desert landscape. Luckily, because we were able to bring back some of our trail crew and uh-huh. science staff, we were out there raking those tracks, doing something that we call vertical revegetation, where we take dead plant matter and we kind of block off trails so folks don't see it and they're not apt to drive down those roads again and across the desert. And luckily, we had a big old rainstorm that happened just after Christmas. And so having wet soil and raking it out, you know, helps that microbiotic crust, that desert crust that helps kind of hold down the desert landscape.
Yeah.
It helps it to rebuild much more rapidly, so that hopefully my goal is that, you know, in a few months or a few years, you're not going to see a lot of those trails. Now, we haven't gotten to all of them yet, and I was out in the park yesterday with staff looking at some of the damage, and some of these trails go on for miles
wow.
into the desert, and we've just not been able to send folks out there to begin raking them out.
So David Smith, can I just jump in here for a second? Because, I mean,
sure.
you keep saying trails, but to be clear, these are tracks that weren't there before, right? That these are newly created tracks by vehicles that actually aren't allowed to drive where you're seeing the tracks.
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
So I didn't mean to imply that these were trails or roads. They become roads the more people that, you know, go down these sections of the desert.
Yeah.
This area of California was used for desert training during World War II. And, you know, we still see some of those tracks from the 1940s down in the southern portion of the park, because, you know, they didn't go back and mitigate the damage. But luckily, like I said, we were able to bring back a lot of our crews to do that.
Okay.
We've also been working a lot on illegal campsites. You know, folks were, you know, when they drove out into the desert, they would create their own campsite. So our crews went out there, you know, people created fire pits. They you know, cut down acacias, you know, junipers and things like that for firewood. So we've been able to clean up most of those campsites to make them look as if they're pristine once again. But, you know, if you cut down a juniper, that's that takes 200-300 years for that plant to reach maturity. And we had three or four incidents of people, you know, damaging or destroying Joshua trees.
Yeah.
You know, those trees grow, you know, for 200-300 years before they die. I don't want to imply that, you know, there are large swaths of, you know, Joshua tree forests that have been cut down. It was truly just exceptional spots mm-hmm. where, you know, where they were damaged. It's not all over the
yeah.
place. And hopefully, you know, my goal today is, you know, if you are able to make it out to California and visit the park, it's going to look pretty pristine, like you'd expect your park to look.
Okay. Well, that's good news then. John Gardner, I'm going to come to you in a second, but David Smith, the superintendent at Joshua Tree National Park, one more question here for you, at least for now.
Okay.
The park is what, almost 800,000 acres, right? And so during normal operations, is it, I presume it's adequately staffed to be sure to keep sort of visitors' behavior in check? Because it seems to me that, like, what happened that all of a sudden, simply because, you know, because of the government shutdown, that a park as vast as Joshua Tree National Park, we saw some bad behavior? Because I can't imagine that there's a ranger, of course, on every, you know, square mile of the park at all times anyway.
Oh, so I our visitors are tremendously wonderful stewards of the landscape generally. We don't typically have problems like this. But I was sitting around with some of my staff yesterday trying to figure out, you know, how we can deal with this in the future. And I think part of the problem was, you know, we didn't have our visitor centers open. You know, that's where we do our initial education and interpretation. You know, most of our visitors come from, you know, outside this area. They come from Europe. They come from back east. They're not used to just how fragile the desert can be. So we really education is one of the main things we do. You know, our entrance stations weren't staffed.
Yeah.
So you didn't have someone to contact you to remind you, hey, you know, stay on the roads when you're here. Hey, if you have a dog, please keep your dog on a leash. You're inside of a national park where there's bighorn sheep and bobcats and mountain lions and things like that. So by not having those staffs operating in the visitor centers, by not having our entrance station staffed, by not having, you know, the 20 guys and gals who work maintenance inside the park, you know, they're out there in the campgrounds every day talking to people. Our trail crew, you know, they're building trails, but they're talking to people every day. By removing our entire workforce from the park during that time, there was no more education and interpretation going on. Yeah, there are a few bad apples that showed up, and, you know, luckily we had enough rangers on duty during the shutdown. We were able to issue a fair number of citations with mandatory appearances. So, you know, folks, they were educated that way. They were educated through the legal system, you know, not to take mm-hmm. your motorcycle and go cross country.
Yeah.
But that's kind of my summation.
Right. Well, David Smith, stand by here for a second. John Gardner, you've been very patient, and thank you for that. Let me just turn to you here. As Senior Director of Budget and Appropriations at the National Parks and Conservation Association, give us the big picture here. I mean, what do you think the long-term effects of the historic government shutdown are going to be on parks like Joshua Tree?
Sure. Well, we're concerned, you know, that Joshua Tree is just one among a number of parks that have sustained damage. Some of which could last for a really long time, in particular with situations where cultural sites have been vandalized, where there are incidents of looting that the Park Service likely still doesn't know about as they go out and do these damage assessments. Certainly there are a lot of businesses that are suffering and other impacts that are of deep concern during any shutdown scenario. But one of our concerns that really alarms us is that the administration has really abdicated its authority to look out for the preservation of these places for current and future generations by creating a scenario that was predictable, leaving resources at risk, as David described, but in many other parks as well, and then adding insult to injury by prolonging that situation by instructing parks to use fee revenue that is critically needed for addressing deferred maintenance. There's now an $11.6 billion deferred maintenance in our national parks. Those fee dollars are critically needed for repairing visitor centers and trails and a lot of other projects that are important to visitors and resource protection. And they were instructed to vacate those accounts in order to prolong this damaging situation. And
right.
Over the coming days, superintendents and other park staff are going to be really assessing and finding other situations where there have been impacts to wildlife behavior, vandalism, not just trash and waste, that the things that people see, but a lot of other damage that is often invisible to visitors.
Well, so David Smith, as superintendent at Joshua Tree National Park, let me ask you, I mean, how much money did you have to defer from entrance fees that you had already collected before the shutdown to help, you know, that maintenance that John Garter was talking about?
Well, Meg, there's kind of two issues. Okay. You know, during the shutdown, we were unable to collect fees for the park, and we kind of plan our budget out, you know, for the next year to deal with those projects that John was mentioning, the deferred maintenance projects and the infrastructure projects that, you know, serve the visitor. So I just got the tally from our fee office. We had expected to bring in a little bit over $1 million, you know, during that time period. It's a Christmas is a really busy time at the park here in Southern California because it's so nice. So that's $1 million that we didn't collect that we're going to have to really look at our fund for the next 8 months and decide, you know, what projects are we going to eliminate this year and, you know, which ones can we go forward with. The secretary gave us permission about, you know, a couple weeks into the shutdown to go ahead and use some of our fund sources that we already have and use those to pay the staff that we were bringing back. We were able to bring back initially about 60 people to deal with the campgrounds. We were having a health and safety issue because the sewage was at the top of the toilets and things along that nature. Yeah. So we had to deal with that immediately. So I brought back the whole maintenance division, you know, to work on that. And they were all paid for out of our Floria, our fee accounts to deal with that. We're still crunching the numbers, but I'm guessing probably about $200,000 to $300,000 we used to cover those wages during that time period.
Okay, well, let's go take a quick call here. Let's go to Spencer, who's calling from New Orleans. Spencer, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say I had driven to Joshua Tree about 12 days ago from New Orleans, and we did get to go in and have a great time. There was a ranger there at the front gate handing out maps just like normal. Didn't take any fees or anything like that, but wanted to thank you to all the rangers that were out there keeping maintenance of the parks and taking care of them.
All right. Well, Spencer, thank you for your call. And let's go to Tim, who's calling from Detroit, Michigan. Tim, you're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say, and certainly it's clear the damage that have been done to the national parks, but when you look at this entire government system, it's really like an ecosystem. And if something is missing out of that ecosystem, if people suffer, you may not be able to see it, but it affects you down the line. And so I think not just the park system, but all the people that miss money during this period, it's going to affect them in a way that we don't see. And I think it makes us appreciate the government more to see what's going on.
Well, Tim, thank you for your call. John Garter, let me turn back to you because we've got another comment that's come in here on social media. Nina Brin says, this is on the users, not on the shutdown. Maybe we Americans lack a culture of the outdoors. We shouldn't need anyone there to tell us not to leave trash or feces lying around. What do you think?
Well, here's the thing. You really, there are obviously some bad actors, as David outlined, people who have clearly done purposeful damage, and that's extremely unfortunate and irresponsible behavior. But there are also a lot of visitors who cause unintended damage where they are not educated by the Park Service staff that are needed to engage in the kinds of behaviors that ensure not just their own safety, but that of wildlife and the integrity of park resources. And some people who may know they're doing things that they're not allowed to do, but don't realize the extent of the damage that's causing. The real situation is not so much pointing the finger at users, which, you know, it's really a matter of an approach to managing our national parks with only 13% of the Park Service staff out there. You need those people, those uniformed rangers who are out there educating people, ensuring that park resources are protected. You can't operate our national parks with such small staffing levels.
Yeah. Well, David Smith, you know, we have, what, maybe 2.5 weeks before there's the possibility, hopefully it won't happen, but possibility of another government shutdown. Are folks at Joshua Tree, are the rangers there trying to prepare for that possibility?
Well, they're professionals. You know, they came to the National Park Service because they love public service and they love taking care of national parks. So they are doing everything they can right now to mitigate the damage that occurred during the shutdown and to educate the public and reaching out to our partners to help out as much as possible if there were to be another shutdown or something like that. Our park association, you know, they volunteered to, you know, operate our visitor centers, you know, during the shutdown. And, you know, just having those exhibits there, having them giving out safety warnings and things like that, that would be, you know, that's a godsend to have folks to be able to do things like that. The businesses in the local community, I'm sure they are ready to jump to it again and start helping us with toilets and things like that. We're really trying to message to the public right now just how fragile the desert ecosystem is and just how important it is for folks to stay on the road. You know, if there is a shutdown, you know, pick up your garbage. You know, don't expect that someone's going to be there to pick it up. To use some of the common sense that to me is, I know because I've been working for the Park Service for almost 30 years, you know, you don't run your dog, you know, through wildlands where there's lots of wildlife. You don't operate a drone where it's going to harass, you know, birds that are up there. We just have to get those messages out.
Well, you know, David, if I might say, I may be based in Boston now, but I grew up on the West Coast, and I'm going to shamefully admit to the nation that I have never been to Joshua Tree National Park. It's an oversight that I have to fix. So I'm going to come out there soon, sometime, hopefully.
You are my personal guest. I will make time, and I would love to show you the park and just how magical and special Joshua Tree
is.
Well,
the desert there is absolutely, as I said at the beginning of the conversation, part of our national park system, which is a gem, a true gem that the United States has that really distinguishes it from so much else in the rest of the world. So David Smith, superintendent at Joshua Tree National Park, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. You have a great day.
And John Garter, Senior Director of Budget and Appropriations at the National Parks and Conservation Association, with us from Washington. John Garter, thank you as well.
Thank you again, Meghna.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.